What's up, guys? This is Mike.
And this is Leo.
And welcome to the Asian Menswear Podcast, a podcast made specifically to empower, inspire, and motivate the next generation of Asian American men to live their best lives. This is for us.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back. We got another spotlight episode for you guys today. Hope everyone's doing good, especially with all the craziness that's been happening this past week, especially with everything that went down in Atlanta. It's been tough. I know everyone is doing their best to process everything, and it's really unfortunate what happened, but I do love how the communities come together in ways such as like the GoFundMes and just supporting the victims' families and whatnot. So that's been amazing. But anyway, guys, happy Friday. We got a super dope guest on the show today. His name is Bart Kwan, and he's best known for being the founder of JK Films on YouTube and Barbell Brigade Clothing and Gym. So welcome, Bart.
Thank you. Thank you.
I saw the video that you posted about the story that you shared from the second grade.
Yeah.
Just for, you know, what happened this past week with the mass shooting. So that, I thought that was pretty cool. And the way that you were able to tell the story so easily and fluidly, I thought it's really cool, man, just to kind of tie everything back together.
Yeah, because, you know, I like listen to what the people say about what's going on right now. And a lot of people, it seems like they feel very helpless, right? Like they're like, why is it happening to us? And how is it going to stop? What do we do? And it just seems like the only outlet that any Asians really have, at least at this moment, is to cry out for help or to try to get, you know, politicians, famous people involved and to try to bring awareness. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm like, even though I'm Asian and I feel like our community is under attack, and I don't know if it's because of my military background or I do mess around with martial arts, but I don't feel as helpless as a lot of the people in my community. Mm-hmm. So I just feel so bad, you know? And then so I'm like, what can we do to empower people? And it kind of made me feel like, you know, when I was a kid getting bullied, like that's really when I felt the most helpless, where you're like, teacher, don't you see? Did you see that kid? That guy just kicked my ass. Go get him right now. And they're like, well, I didn't catch him in the act or whatever, you know? And now it's like, and then easily that kid, Jason, can turn it around and go, no, Bart actually threw something at me first. So it becomes he said, she said.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to kind of relate it in a way where it's like, you know, I think as Asians, we're taught to be very like passive and just kind of let things blow over. Let's focus on the big picture. You know, I don't know if your parents ever taught you this, but like let's say at school, I get into a fight. You know, a lot of my other ethnic friends, they'd be like, fight back, you know, let them know it's not okay. Right. But a lot of Asians are like, you know what? It's okay. They're just mad. Focus on getting the good grades. You're going to go to a good college and none of this really matters. And I think you kind of listen to that over and over again. And then I think as a people, we're very peaceful people. But then it also becomes where we start to be known as okay to victimize. And then so I really wanted to kind of paint the picture that like, if we want this to stop, we have to take a stance. And we shouldn't go out and be the aggressor or do anything illegal. But if it does come to us, we need to have a hard stop at what's going on. And that's the only way they will stop viewing us as easy prey.
Right. Because the people who are committing these crimes, I mean, they're not going to listen.
Yes.
And the only way is through example. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's a perfect example how you talked about like, the teacher is almost like the government, right? Or like the teacher representing that, the bully representing this and that. So the only way is to show, unfortunately, is to show that as much as we try, you know, we try not to condone or whatever, but I 100% agree. So when you said that, I was like, I think we need to. And I think as a community, we always kind of yell for other people to take care of our issues, like our representation issues or, you know, I think we need to start taking initiative. So when I saw the video, I was like, that's dope.
Yeah. And it's an issue that's not even just in the Asian American community. You know, it's like right now it's like very prevalent, but I think in a lot of communities where like, if people feel like they're in a helpless position, it's like the minute you feel helpless, mm-hmm. instead of crying out for help, and yes, we do need to do that. We need to get awareness and get like the whole country on board, but we all need to see like, okay, what can we do to stop this from happening ourselves first in all the communities, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's something that's really, really important too. And it takes, you know, like we're just one giant spider web of ecosystem. Yeah. So it takes a lot of moving parts to make real change, but just getting people and like teacher, teacher or government, that's not enough. We got to do something too.
I agree. And it's definitely very complex and complicated. It's not one shoe fits all. And I think that's the reason why we have so much fighting going on with like different solutions with different people. But anyway, the point of the podcast today is definitely to highlight you, to put on a positive note. And with everything going on, like I guess for this episode, I want to show people like, hey, Asian Americans, we're going to continue overcoming. And I wanted to, you know, what Asian Menswear is all about is just showing Asian guys doing great things that no one really hears about, right? Because I think for a lot of times we're kind of, you know, just kind of buried under the rug. And you, Bart, obviously, you're, I only said the Barbell Brigade and then the JK Films, but you also have a ton of other things on your resume. Like you're a Marine veteran, you're a UCLA grad, you're business partners in different food ventures. That's a ton of stuff. I mean, especially for me being young, watching you do your skits way back in the day. I think the first time I ever saw you was probably like middle school.
Yeah.
So to see where you've come, it's pretty cool. And to be able to interview you today and make sure that your story is documented with, you know, Asian Menswear in this podcast.
Awesome. Thank you.
Important. But I want to jump right in and, you know, get, because obviously you've done well for yourself, right? You've gone through military school, business, comedy, show, whatever, entertainment, everything. So where does the Bart Kwan story start? Where are you from? How'd you grow up? I'd love to hear about that.
Okay. Yeah. So my mom's from Taiwan and my dad's from China. And he was like a refugee where he fled communist China, did the whole Hong Kong route because he speaks Cantonese. So he went through Hong Kong. And then from Hong Kong, he went into America. I actually never asked him how he got from Hong Kong to America. But I do know he went through like the mountains and like the sea to get to Hong Kong. And he told me that when he first got there, he used to sleep in the kitchen of a restaurant. So he would be like, "Hey, this is what I'm. Is it okay if you don't have to pay me? I just need a place to stay." And eventually, he would work that job and another job, and then from there, he would slowly save up and finally be able to afford like coming to America. So it's just like a crazy story, and I feel like a lot of refugees have a similar story. Yep, but but anyways, pretty much like my parents, they had me, and then I was pretty much born and raised in LA in like early 90s. That's kind of like. I was born in 84. And so I grew up like late 80s, early 90s in LA. And that's kind of like where I guess the whole story starts. Yeah.
Gotcha. And from what I've seen, you didn't grow up with a lot of exposure to Asians, right? Which is pretty typical for a lot of Asians. I mean, if that's true.
Yeah. So I grew up in the city called Cerritos. And in Cerritos, it's like, where are you from?
I was originally from Dallas, but I've been in the Bay Area since I was like 13.
Okay. Now, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So in Cerritos at that time, it was extremely diverse. And I'm glad I grew up there because it kind of helped shape like my lens of life. So, you know, like in places where there's like small little groups that hang out together, like, you know, you have like the very Asian rice rocket look in the 90s, or you have like the white skaters, or, you know, it's like, everyone's all separate, right? But in Cerritos at the time, it was so diverse. You would see like a white kid with bangs, like because they hung out with a bunch of Asians, right?
Oh, and you would see,
and you would see Asian kids like on the football team. Like you would see black kids skating. Like it was just everyone was friends with everyone, and I think that really was a really cool way of me of viewing life because I never felt like anything was bound by anything. Versus like some of my other friends that I talked to that grew up in other cities, they're like, "Oh yeah, if you're Asian, like you just do this. Or if you're white, you just do this. And you know, if you're black, you just do this." But growing up in Cerritos at that time, it was like, you do whatever you want. You know, like there was like Indians in the Filipino club, you know, it was just like random. Like, you're my friend, we bring them in. And like, so everyone was just doing everything. And it wasn't until I got kicked out of school my sophomore year at Cerritos High School, when I came to Monterey Park is in the San Gabriel Valley. And that was like Asian central. That was like the 626, you drive down the streets and you see Bank of America. That sign is in Chinese, you know, like literally the entire, there's just rows and rows of stores. Everything is in Chinese. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a culture shock to me where I'm like, what the fuck? Am I in China? This is crazy.
Yeah. Wait, so you're saying it was very diverse in, you said Cerritos?
Cerritos, yeah.
So was there like a large group of Asians in Cerritos, or was it just like...
It was just so diverse where it was like there was a good amount of Asians, but it was also diverse. So there's Indian, Filipino, Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. Wow. So it wasn't like, even amongst the Asians, it was diverse.
Wow. Especially in the 90s too. I'm surprised.
Yeah. So wow. I think what's cool is, so Cerritos, it's like at the tip of where LA meets Orange County, meets Long Beach. It's literally like in that area. Okay. So I think because of that, like you just had like a really cool mixture of all kinds of kids.
Wow. So how'd you feel when you get to San Diego? I mean, was it hard to adjust? Or I mean, what was like, because what I'm learning now is like, I think a lot of Asian Americans, they go through, well, it depends on like, if you've been exposed early on to a lot of Asians, or like, it's weird. If you're exposed early on, then you kind of have like this very tunnel vision of how life is. But if you grow up where you don't really see a lot of Asians, then you have a whole different tunnel vision of it. Yeah. So I guess my question for you is like, so how was it? Were you able to like adjust into that easily? Or did you kind of feel like, whoa, this is a little different?
Oh, it was really different. So like, you know, I feel like when you grow up in a diverse place, the benefit of it is you kind of have like zero glass ceiling, zero limitations. Like you see people do anything that they want, which was really, really cool. But then on the flip side, you're not able to relate that much. Like a lot of the Chinese movies that I watch as a kid, I couldn't really talk to anybody about that because there's just not that many like Chinese people. Like some of the Chinese that I knew were like third generation, fourth generation. Some may not even speak English.
Yeah.
You know, and then like, so like one of my favorite like Chinese, characters in Chinese is called Wang Fei Hong. And he's like this like crazy, like martial arts character, like Jet Li has played him before, pretty much all kinds. He's like a famous guy that a lot of Chinese actors play.
Gotcha.
And when I came to San Gabriel Valley, although it wasn't diverse and it was a big culture shock, but when I started talking to people about like Chinese movies and movies they grew up on, everyone knew what the hell I was talking about.
Wow.
And so it's like, oh shit, that's crazy. So you just get to kind of connect in a way different way. You know, it was like, oh, we have the same upbringing. And when Chinese New Year was around, like all the streets were popping. Whereas in Cerritos, not so much because it is so diverse. So it's not as celebrated. But San Gabriel Valley is literally like modern day China. So when it's Chinese New Year, it's fucking popping. There's fucking lion dance going up and down the sidewalk. And I'm like, oh shit, this is crazy. What the fuck's going on? Yeah. So it was just like, there was kind of like the pros and cons of each. Well, not cons, but like there's just a, like you relate in certain ways and then your other ways aren't as relatable, I guess.
Yeah. And just a side note, man, for the longest time, I was trying to figure out what your ethnicity was. But, you know, growing up, I think the first thing I seen you was doing Uncle Sam. So I thought you were Vietnamese for a little bit.
Yeah.
I swear, I thought I was like, because I'm Vietnamese. So I was like, I hope he's Vietnamese. And then I thought you were Korean for a little bit. But I think it's because of the accent you're doing. And then turns out you're Taiwanese, right?
Yeah. So I'm Taiwanese, Chinese. And, you know, when me and my partner, Joe, when we first started creating JK, at that time, like our whole mission was like, if we ever want to make it right, like, you know, in the Latin community, they support each other, Puerto Ricans, Mexicans, whatever. So they're just, okay, that's the Latin community. That's how like they can come up as a group. They can vote together. They can do all these things together so they can make change. Asians weren't very unified at the time. You know, it's even if Jeremy Lin comes up, you know, like some Koreans might be like, well, that's Chinese, you know, so we're not all supporting each other. Yeah. So when me and my partner, Joe, were doing content, we're like, you know what, we're going to keep our ethnicity secret and we're just going to do all kinds of accents and just try to bring people together. So it wasn't until maybe even like 5 or 6 years ago when we finally came out with what our ethnicities were.
Oh, that's why I never knew. That's why it was always a question. Yeah. Oh, I forgot you did that on purpose. Oh shit, that is crazy. If you even thought that. Okay, so JK Films, this started, when did you guys start JK Films? Like how old were you guys? Is this like post high school?
We started in 2007 in the middle of college.
Oh, middle of college. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so you thought that far. You're like, you guys were that thoughtful when you guys created it. Like you said, you wanted to be, you didn't want to tell people what you guys were in order to kind of help, you know, bring everyone together. So those are the things that you guys were thinking about at the time.
Yeah, because even even in high school, right? Like some of our friends, like we had some Japanese friends, Korean friends. And I think just growing up, like, I don't know if you remember, this is way back in the day, but like, I think like Korea went to the World Cup. And when Korea went to the World Cup, like my one or two Korean friends were so proud, right? And then it just seemed like no one else really cared. But then I'm like, you guys do know, like when we're out in the real world,
we're all the same.
Like, yeah, the white people, brown people, black people, they look at us all the same. So if we already self-divide, we're never going to make an impact, you know? So I think from just an early age, like I would have friends in boot camp that are Filipino, and then people call him Jackie Chan. And I'm like, dude, this is so, I'm like, close. Yeah, not even close, dude. But I'm like, hey, you know what? Like, that's how it is. Cause like, I mean, if you see like an Irish guy or German guy, we probably can't really tell either.
It's so, just a white guy.
Exactly. So I don't blame them either. But at least if they go, okay, we're both white and we're gonna like vote and make change together, then I'm like, then me and my Filipino brother, you know, we're both yellow. You got to do it together. Yeah.
Wow. For you to even see that then, that's amazing. Wow. I guess like the podcast is about like, you know, how do you defy those negative Asian stereotypes, right? The one we always know. And it's kind of being beaten down all the time. So as I grow the podcast, I want to like move away from it because eventually it's not going to be a stereotype.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
Would you say you've kind of always been proud to be Asian? Did you ever feel... because you know a lot of people kind of ashamed of the culture. Did you ever feel that way at all, of being Asian, I guess, so to speak?
A little bit. I think just as much Asian pride growing up, but there's also kind of like the Asian embarrassment a little bit, you know, kind of like what I was talking about, where you know, you get into a fight at school and the kid that does go against the bully, everyone goes, okay, that guy's a hero. He's regarded as a hero, you know? Mm-hmm. And then so like, let's say the same happens to me. The bully picks on me. I fight back. We both go to the principal's office. And then I'm thinking my mom is going to be proud of me. She goes to school, finds out I get into a fight. And she yells at me like, why the hell did you do that? Like, what did I tell you about big picture? And so just because certain things in the culture aren't celebrated here, those are the parts that I think you start to be like, more ashamed of, you know, where like, I think Asians are very big picture thinking. It's like, don't like pick and choose your battles. These little ones don't matter. Like once you become a fucking like doctor or lawyer, like you're straight, you know, you're like, don't get caught up in this petty fucking shit, you know?
Yeah.
And then so, but then I think in America, like individualism and like standing up for what's right, for what belongs to you and how you feel in your opinion, that's what's celebrated. So there was a part of that where I was like, man, I feel kind of like, why do I feel like such a weak little bitch? And why do I feel like all Asians kind of think like these weak little bitches all the time? Yeah. But what was cool was because I grew up in Cerritos and there's like such a diverse, like Asian and just all around, like group, seeing certain cultures, like really crush it really hard. It made me know at a young age, okay, cool. So Asians being passive is a choice. It's not genetic. It's not like we're just made to be pussies or whatever, you know? Cause I'm like, there's this Asian dude on a wrestling team. He would beat the fuck out of everyone in the entire area. So I'm like, oh, okay. So it's not this genetic. Yeah. And then, so I would see that. Right. And then, when I moved to the San Gabriel Valley at that time in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Right.
Man, San Gabriel Valley, it's a crazy place. So growing up in Cerritos, I would say it's pretty middle class, pretty diverse. And me being a troublemaker, I had to like kind of find where the gangs are and kind of find where I felt like I belong. Cause I just felt kind of rebellious, you know?
Yeah.
And when I got kicked out of school, getting into trouble, when I came to San Gabriel Valley, that was like the Compton of Asia. Right. And I would meet a lot of Asian kids that are fucking hood as fuck. Their older brother has already been locked up. Their older brother doing life for shooting up some cops. There's kids that, you know, been packing guns to school since they're like 12 years old. I'm like, oh shit, I was being a play gangster. Like, these kids are real thugs, and they're really like born into this. Like, if they don't carry a gun, the rival Hispanic gang is going to come and rob them of everything every single day they walk home, you know?
Yeah.
So seeing that, but then also seeing the flip side of it, of how hardcore some of the Asian gangs were, obviously, like, that life is wrong, but seeing that, like the non-pussiest of people be Asians, I was like, oh fuck, this is crazy. So, like, I guess, like, I've witnessed the complete opposite of the stereotype that has been painted in the media. I've witnessed the complete opposite of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then this obviously leads you into military, right?
Yeah.
Was the military like a choice of like your way out, or was it something that you kind of were interested in doing?
Well, so like growing up, I got into a lot of trouble. And I got kicked out of, I think, like 3 elementary schools, 2 high schools. And so my parents never really went to any type of graduation of mine, you know, where I get to wear a cap and gown or any type of ceremony. Yeah. And I'm the only child. So, you know, being Asian, you feel very shameful and like dishonorable and all that. So I'm like, man, this is fucked up. I'm like, how my parents must be thinking, dude, we have one kid and this kid's fucked up.
We came all the way over here. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. So I was like, dude, I got to do something so they can go to some sort of ceremony. and then that's when I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I do need to get my life together. I do see like, you know, with the big picture Asian kicking in, going like, I can see where this life is going. I need something to put some discipline in my life. And then that's when I joined the military. And so it was by choice. And then it was by choice to kind of like not only kind of jumpstart a path to success, but also in a way kind of like show my parents they didn't raise a failure.
Right. And this reminds me of Don Tran. I actually had him on the podcast. Super cool guy. About him, like, I got to figure my stuff out. And then he went into the military too. And like, as I'm looking at
that guy's a badass, dude.
Yeah.
Don, yeah. He's so cool. Badass. He's one of the, dude, that guy, he is so humble. He'll downplay everything, man. This guy.
That's what I noticed too. I was like, you're definitely downplaying, like kind of making all like it's simple or something. That's what I got.
No, this guy, he's like, he's been on secret missions. He's jumped out of airplanes. Man, this guy, that guy's a badass. Yeah.
Yeah. So that definitely reminds me, just the story. And the more research I'm doing with you, I start to see all these like career choices that you make, and it really goes against anything that like you're not supposed to be doing as an Asian guy. You're like the military, the entertainment, the business owner, but like I guess in your way, because you're doing like clothing brand and also the gym. But like in the military, how was that? Because I know there wasn't a lot of Asians. I mean, I spoke to Don about this too, and it seems like you're the type of guy that you like to show people otherwise, you know, you want to, cause a lot of, you know, with being Asian, a lot of people just had these notions about you just because, I mean, it's the media, like you can't really blame them. That's all they know. They don't have exposure to a lot of Asians. So they're going to see you have these preconceived notions. I mean, I know you had to deal with that in the military, right? How'd you deal with that?
Yeah. So like, I think, you know, after like growing up in Cerritos in a diverse area and then being proud of Asian and then also seeing all kinds of Asian thugs and knowing what the full spectrum of Asians are from the very peaceful, very, I'm going to go to school, Ivy League, to the craziest thugs you've ever met. I've seen the full spectrum of Asians, you know?
Now you know.
And then, so I know that. And now I go to like the military, and man, back then I joined the Marine Corps in 2003 and, there might have been like maybe one and maybe me and then 3 other Asians out of like 90 people in my platoon. And so I think because of that, I've always felt like I had to represent, you know, like whatever I did, I'm like, okay, since I'm one of few here, if I act like a little bitch, that guy acts like a little bitch, everyone's going to think, oh, fuck, all Asian little bitch. You're done, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So like everything that I did, I got to push extra hard, be that much more badass, like be that much more of a better leader, And if there was any type of racism or bullying, I got to stop it immediately.
Shut it down.
Not only for me, but for these three, and then for how they view every other Asian that they ever come across. So yeah. I definitely had like a very hardcore, I got to represent for my people in the military and coming out, you know, like going, even going to college, like everything that I did, like lifting, like everything, I always felt like, okay, I got to represent. I got to do it for my people, you know?
Yeah. And how's it feel when you do see that change in that person who might've, they come in with that thinking this about you, and then you can, I mean, this has happened for me, but like when I know someone thinks a certain way about me because I'm Asian, and yeah. then I kind of show them the opposite of that. It's like this kind of, I don't know. Has that happened with you? I'm sure it has happened with you a lot.
Yeah.
You
see that, I mean, change. It's cool. Cause then you kind of see like they're like almost their brain forming new synapses, like right in front of you.
Yeah.
And you kind of see that, and it's cool. And then you're like, and then they're like, wow, that's crazy. You know? And it's almost like, you know, you're making your friend try something that looks like shit for the first time, but they eat it and they're like, whoa, that's really Ooh. Good. You know? Yeah. So it's cool. And it's good because now I feel like we're bridging a gap and we're helping each other understand each other. I don't do it in a way where it's like, I told you so. I told you Asian yeah, like yeah, this. Yeah. Yeah. It's more of like a cool. We shake hands and we got a better understanding and yeah. like, you know me better. I know you better now, you know?
Yeah. I think that's the best approach for sure. And I think a lot of times it's just ignorance. And then once they learn about you a bit more, it becomes a better way to communicate, I guess.
Yeah.
That's just what I noticed. And I notice a lot of Asian guys are really successful. They used what you do, where it's like, I got to represent. Cause yeah. I think a lot of times cause we're so small in population and sometimes you're alone. It feels like we're alone on this journey, but there's like little guys in every industry really trying to represent for like the whole thing. So I love that you already seen that early on and you wanted to be the representative of that. And with everything going on, like you go into the military, you did, you know, barbell brigade with everything you do, what is the coolest thing has happened, I guess, for you in your life with everything you've done since JK Films?
The coolest thing that has happened?
Coolest, proudest, something that's like, you're always going to think back in, maybe something that you always reminisce back to as well.
I kind of feel like the coolest thing that has ever happened to me is my son being born. Because I think when you live your life, right, like you're like, okay, I got to represent for the Asians. I got to do this to make my mom proud. I got to be successful. I got to do all these things, like everything that I got to right all my wrongs in the past. Like you're kind of all doing it for yourself, right? And then the minute you have a kid be born, you're like, oh shit, I actually live my whole life to be a good role model for him. Wow. You know, like everything that you did, it's powerful to be like, you know, I had to represent for the Asians in the military. So everything I did, I had to do it that much better. But it's even more powerful when your son knows that. When your son knows, my dad, he was one of the few guys in the military that was Asian and he represented extra hard, you know? So it like everything kind of becomes magnified like two times when you have a kid. Wow. And then so like, you know, when you make money and you ball out, it's tight, you know, it's like, okay, cool. Like, you know, this guy crushed it and he's an entrepreneur and he's successful. He's able to get a dope ass ride or whatever. But then to be able to like put your kid in that ride and you see this picture and you're like, fuck, like my mom drove around in a Corolla and I was in the backseat of a Corolla. And then you see your kid in a whole different, you know, space and lifestyle. Like that's really, really cool.
Do you think your definition of success has changed from when you started JK Films, for example, until now? Like where were your aspirations then? Was it like just getting money, getting a nice car? And do you think that's changed now that you're much older and you have a family?
Oh, yeah.
What was the original aspirations? I'd love to hear that.
So I think the original aspiration, I think this is everyone's. It's like your first big aspiration is probably, how do I make six figures, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that's like the first thing. You're like six figures. And then once you hit that, you're like, okay, cool. Like this is like the first benchmark that everyone strives to achieve. And then pretty much anything after that, that's still money based, you know, it's still like whether it's 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever figures, it's all money based. And then I think for me, we're at the point where I'm in my life now where I think it's more time based now. I'm like, what can I do so that I have more time to spend with my family, rather than what can I do to spend more time on the business to make more money? Because like you can make all the money in the world, but if you're working 80 hours a day, then it's like, then you kind of go back to like the hardworking immigrant Asian syndrome where it's like, yeah, my parents were worked really, really hard, but I never saw them. Yeah. And then it's not until I'm 20 something where I start redeveloping a relationship with my parents where like, I'm like, what's the point of working so hard if I don't have a relationship with my son? So now the definition of success to me is, having the, obviously the financial freedom, but also the time and freedom to not be locked down by the financial freedom and to have the freedom to spend the time with the kid and the family.
Love that.
That's, yeah.
That's usually what happens when you get that family, become a father from what I've, what I've seen. Was there a moment where you sat down and just had time to think and then just like maybe thought to yourself, like, damn, I made it.
I made it,
cause you did so much. Was there like in between you doing like switching around different things? You're like, wait, you're just laying in bed. You're like, damn, I made it. Or I did what I wanted to do at least right now. Did you have a moment like that?
I did. And I think had that moment. And I think that's when people like really celebrate things, you know, like whether you go to Vegas and you have like a crazy night or something. I think the moment that I actually remember it was, so my dream car ever since I was in high school was a Corvette, and my partner Joe's dream car ever since in high school was a Dodge Challenger. And I remember me and Joe were in a hotel room because we were touring and doing like these comedy shows at that time. And our financial advisor hit us up. And because at that time we're just hustling, you know, like head down, nose buried in work, and we're just crushing it. We didn't even care what money, any type of business was coming in. We were paying ourselves just very little. We just wanted to push hard and without even looking at how much money was coming in. And then our financial advisor, I think texted or emailed us, and he was like, hey, you guys need to spend some money because you're going to be paying a shit ton in taxes this year. So you might as well find ways to deduct it. And then that's when me and Joe, we texted him. We're like, are you saying we can get a Corvette and Dodge Challenger? And then that's when he was like, I think you're going to need to spend a little bit more money than that. And me and Joe were like, what? We started jumping up and down in the hotel. We're like, what the fuck? That's crazy. And I'm like, no way. And then I was like, oh, fuck. And I text him like, yo, can I get a Porsche? And he goes, yup. And I'm like, oh, what the fuck? This is fucking crazy. And
it was just
it was just such a crazy moment. So right then and there, I was like, yo, Joe, you still going to get the Dodge Challenger? He goes, fuck the Dodge Challenger.
I was going to say, because Dodge Challenger is like not too crazy. So I was like,
no, it's not. But, you know, like both of us, we kind of had like low aspirations. And then so he's like, I'm going to get. So he ended up getting a Jaguar F-Type. It's a sick-ass sports car. Yeah. I got a Porsche 911. And I remember driving off the lot and just having that feeling. It was like, wow, this is crazy. You know, like I got a car that I never thought in my life I would ever get. Yeah. And I have one. And not only did I have one because without even really like aiming for it, but it's what my financial advisor advised me to get.
Amazing.
Which is crazy, you know? And then what's crazy after that is after I got that out of my system, I don't really like yearn for any other sick ride or anything because I just realized that's actually not me. So it was cool. It was cool to kind of like have a Porsche for like those 3 years. It was super fun. But it also helped me understand because, you know, a lot of people, okay, cool, you get the Porsche. The next, are you going to get the Lambo? Are you going to get a Ferrari? Because, you know, you kind of just think in those type of progressions. But then I realized, I'm like, you know what? After I got that out of my system, I think that's it. I don't think that's really like, I don't think I'm like a luxury car kind of dude. Nothing wrong with that. Right. But you just kind of learn more about yourself, you know?
Yeah, because I think we're taught like, you know, like goals are set by like monetary steps. And then once you get there, you realize that's not my goal. And then it starts to change from there. That's cool. And how many years were you guys working up to this point? I mean, because you said you weren't even caring about the money and all that, and out of nowhere, now you have it.
Yeah. So it was like, it's got to be maybe like 8 years in.
Damn.
Yeah, maybe like 8 years in. Because, you know, when we first started, I remember me and Joe were in college, and when our JK YouTube first got connected with AdSense, like this was maybe 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And I remember getting a check from Google AdSense, and it said $1,000 on it. And me and Joe were in my college apartment jumping up and down.
Going crazy.
$1,000. Oh my God, this is crazy for making funny videos. And then we were like, wait, but that's $1,000 for 6 months worth of videos?
Damn.
We're like, dude, I don't think that's that much money. You know? And then we slowly built the company, and we started making the channel started making 60 grand a year. But the 60 grand a year, we had a team of five. So 60 divided by five people, you know? So it wasn't much. So I think because of that, we just knew, you know, like we just got to keep cranking it and crank this machine. And so we were way focused more on the views than we ever were on the money. And then also like the comments, and then seeing how people reacted to the videos, like almost those analytics were way more important than the money. And then so it caught us off guard when our financial advisor was like, yo, okay, so I'm doing your taxes for this year. And then you need to, it's like Q4, you better do something or else you're going to be paying a shit ton next year, you know? So that's when we're like shifting from looking at all these metrics to looking at like actual dollar sign metrics. And we're like, wow. Oh fuck. Yeah.
And with you, obviously you guys still have JK Films, and then you adding on Barbell.
Yeah.
And the story behind Barbell is pretty awesome too, how you guys wanted to do the gym, but then you guys were like, well, how do we fund it? And then you guys actually did the clothing for it first, and then that took off, and then that became, and the gym became secondary. That's amazing. How do you do all the, like, it seems like you're doing so much. You got a family, you got Barbell, you got JK, and everything else you got going on. How do you balance everything? How does that work? Do you have like a schedule that's like, these days are strictly this, and then you try to just optimize everything? How does that work?
Yeah. So I think for people that catch me like right now, like right in this snapshot, this moment, I think it's like, oh wow, you do a lot. But for me, I always try to start small and then it slowly scales. So when people catch me, it's like they caught me in a full blown version of what I started with. So when we're doing JK and we wanted to open a gym, I never was a personal trainer, never ran a gym. My wife was never a personal trainer, never ran a gym. So we're like, how are we going to open a gym? So we went to a Barnes & Noble. Remember those bookstores? Yeah. So we went to a Barnes & Noble. Yeah, we found a business plan book. Because we're like, okay, we know how to operate an online business, but like a brick and mortar, I don't know how to do this. So we were looking, we're just sitting on the floor, digging through different business plan books. And we found one that at the end of every chapter, there was a worksheet. So by the time you finish the book, you would have like a legit business plan that you put together. Oh. So we're like, let's go with that one. so we're like, you know what, JK at the time, because we're working with all artists, right?
Yeah.
In the creative field, no one showed up to work until like 11. Like, so pretty much for JK, like our work hours back then was like 11 to like 8 p.m. or 11 to 7 p.m. It was like shifted way down.
Yeah.
So me and my wife were like, why don't we just meet an hour a day from 10 to 11 and then just fill out this read and go over notes with each other and fill out this worksheet. So that's what we did. Just an hour a day. And then in a year, we had our business plan. And we just told each other, we're just going to keep going until we hit a roadblock that's too big for us to be able to overcome.
Yeah.
And we never were. We never, like, we got the business plan. We're like, okay, cool. Like, let's look at commercial space. Okay, cool. Now let's go to City Hall to see if the zoning is good. Okay, cool. Now let's pitch our business to City Hall. Is that okay? And they gave us a business license. So it was just kind of one step in front of the other. And there was no real obstacle that was like, oh shit, it's so big. And then so like just 1 hour a day, we got the gym set up. Then it goes from that gym to like, you know, us spending a little bit more time there and then a little bit more time on the gym YouTube and then on like apparel. So it's just slowly doing something really little, but then slowly scaling it over time. And then so now like 7 years in, it looks like, holy shit, there's like apparel and there's a gym and there's supplements and they got this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it all just started from really small and just slowly nudging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got, it's just one location, right? Or is it, you guys got two Barbell locations? Or is it one?
No, we just got one. We got one in downtown.
Oh, okay. It must be the other food places that I mixed up.
Yeah.
It seems like even at JK, you could be fine. But as you're continuously building, I feel like the part of me thinks that you're not so much building, well, maybe, but like maybe for financial reasons, but it feels like you're building into other passions that you have, right? Like barbells, because you enjoy powerlifting and things like that. So it's pretty cool. So I guess my question was like, why continue? Obviously you're a dad now, but I would assume that you're doing it for your family. But was there other reasons before that to continue moving, continue getting these milestones over and over and over and over?
So we have all kinds of other stuff, like in our food group, like we have Junbi Matcha, we have Shrimp Daddy, which is like our Hawaiian shrimp company. And it's as we started doing JK and then we started like meeting more friends and we started realizing, I think first you pursue your passion, right? And then whatever you can, you kind of push that passion out. Then you start realizing like, oh, cool. Like especially in a friend circle, you're like, oh, that guy has a really dope passion. That's cool. Like, how can we get together and support them? Uh-huh. And then, so it kind of becomes almost like this group passion. And then like, what can we do to support each other type of thing? So kind of even like my first powerlifting meet, like David So, who doesn't work out at all, he came with me all the way down to San Diego to watch me cut weight, to support me. So it was just like, as we got older and grew up, we were just, you know, supporting each other and we kind of support each other's businesses. And now we're intertwined in each other's businesses.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see kind of like the evolution of everything, you know?
Right. It reminds me of Adam Sandler. Like how because you got all your buddies with, you know, JK Films. So it's more like not even work. It's more like you guys just hanging out.
Yeah.
And he's always putting everyone on. And that's what it seems like when I look about it.
Yeah. That's one thing I love about Adam Sandler, where like every movie you see all his buddies.
Always.
The same buddies.
I love that.
Yeah.
And it looks like we're closing up on time here, but usually what I ask my guest is if you were on your deathbed and you only have like let's say you got 20 words, 30 words left, right? It's like that one movie with Eddie Murphy, where he's like, if he speaks, he might die. If he uses all 1,000 words, he dies. So if you're on your deathbed, and you got a limited amount of words to say to someone, what would be the best piece of advice you can give them that's going to help them throughout their entire life? Like, if you take anything from me, this is going to help you in your business, your sports life, whatever it is, what would it be?
I only need 4 words.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect.
It's don't be a bitch.
I think that pretty much solves it all.
That's what I tell myself. You know, it's like actually right before this podcast, I finished up something else at 4. I wrapped up and I knew I had my podcast with you at 4:30.
Yeah.
You know, and then right now I'm really trying to get lean. So I'm trying to do a second cardio session and my legs hurt. So I can't really run. So it's, you know, you know, when you want to do things, you start to have like all these little excuses that pop up. Like, oh, wait, but you got a podcast in like 30 minutes. What are you going to do in 30 minutes? Oh, yeah, your leg hurts. Your leg hurts too. So you can't run. Oh, you might as well just chill, you know? And then, but what I'm really thankful of is there's this part of me, this guy that's what I call like anti-bitch in my brain. He goes, you got a pool, motherfucker. You better go swim some sprints then, you know? And then, I'm like, oh fuck, you're so right. Why the fuck do I have a pool? And then, you know, and then I'm like, I go touch the water and I'm like, oh man, it's just cold. Hell no. Nah. Yeah. And then the guy is like, oh, you know, if it's cold, you better get in. And he's like, you want me to call you a bitch the whole day? And I'm like, fuck. All right.
Dude, that's awesome. You have the opposite guy pushing you versus a guy telling, ah, it's okay, man. Just go relax. You earned it.
Yeah. Awesome. I got that guy too. That guy always speaks first. And then the bitch guy, he almost like comes in from behind the curtain. Like, what you say, motherfucker? So I'm like, all right. So I think those 4 words.
I love
anytime that. I've reached where I'm like, should I be a little bit lazy or put in extra work? And I think because there's that guy that comes in just like, oh, you know what you need to do. So I'm like, all right. And every time I do it, I always thank him. You know, I'm like, thank you for pushing me because you know what? You were right.
Right.
That helped me become that much more successful. So I only need those 4 words. Don't be a bitch.
Damn, love that. Perfect question for you. And then one last question. Okay, where do you, I don't know how far you plan out, but where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? What are you working on? What do you see yourself I think you guys are moving, right? You guys are going to be going to Vegas or something?
Yeah. So that's part of like the whole family plan. Our family plan is we want to go to a place, you know, where the cost of living is a little bit cheaper, like not just taxes, but like the cost of a home, like groceries, or even like being able to buy our parents a home. Like if I wanted to buy Gio's parents a home, my parents a home, move my uncle, and we all want to live on the same street, with my income in LA, it's impossible. You got to be like Will Smith or Kevin Hart to be able to do something like that in LA, right?
Yeah.
But in Vegas, it's highly possible. So I think for me, we were just kind of brainstorming like, what kind of life do we want to live? What kind of options do we want to have for ourselves? And if we want to be able to just like, fuck you, let's buy everybody a house and live close and be able to have spend more time. Like, we can't do that now, but if we move to a state with a lower cost of living, then we can plan things that are, and things that we thought were out of our reach are now more within reach. So that's definitely something the next 5 or 10 years is one of our goals, is to help bring the family closer. And
professionally,
for sure. I want to get, like one of their dreams is to get a movie made. And that's something
I was listening to that. That's amazing, man.
Yeah. So we actually had a pilot that we were pitching last year, right before COVID hit, and like Hulu, Netflix Asia was interested. I think Comedy Central was interested, but you know, as soon as a pandemic hits, everyone looks at their resources, and the budgets that they had to invest in new projects shrank down. So they have to focus on the ones that they had. So we have to kind of restart all over with that momentum.
Yeah.
But that's definitely it. And I'm also working on a children's book, like, you know, growing up, you hear like tortoise and the hare type of stories, and it teaches you like a little lesson at the end. Well, there's like little lessons that I want to be able to teach my son. So I wrote like a children's like rhyming book already with the lesson built in. And I just want to develop it and have it where I feel like this is something that I think all kids should know. So just like, I think I'm just like a creative person. So it might not go like from big movie to big movie to bigger movie. It's just more like kind of all over the place, like where I feel like so whatever like pulls me in that direction, I always just try to go 100% in that direction.
Love that, man. That's amazing. And just from your path trajectory, it looks like you're probably going to hit all those things. And I'd love to kind of revisit that conversation, man.
Hell yeah.
And obviously people can find you like Bart Kwan. I think it's Bart Kwan on Instagram, and then obviously JK Films. And then if you just search up Bart Kwan on YouTube, you'll see him pop up.
Yep.
And then is there any other plugs you'd love to just put people on? Obviously the gym and
or anything. Yeah. If you want to see like my daily life with my wife and my kid, you just YouTube Bart and Gio. You can see that. And if you're interested in like the Joombee, which is our matcha and teas that we've been talking about, you can just Google Joombee. And that's pretty much it. Barbell Brigades in downtown LA, and online we have clothes, supplements, and all that. So yeah, just check it all out.
Dope, man. Thank you so much, Bart. Really
thank you for having me.
I felt like I was on a comedy show having an interview with you. So I love that. I think this is the most I laughed in an interview. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And now that you've been introduced, man, if you ever have time, love to kind of bring you on for like other like topics. You know, I feel like we can go pretty deep just from what I'm hearing.
Hell yeah.
I'd love to have you on, but appreciate it so much. Thank you so much for your time, Bart.
Thank you, man. You asked great questions. So I had a great time.
Oh, did I? Okay, great. But yeah, guys, hope you guys enjoy the episode. We'll talk to you guys next time.